Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. Working with children is among the more difficult jobs in psychotherapy. For most therapists, this is because of how hard it is to see a child experience suffering, and it is really hard. For many therapists, there comes a time in one's training that we have to go through a difficult reckoning of how to do this style of therapy, if you do decide to do it. That is, are you going to be authentic? Are you going to let yourself have moments of real emotion, specifically difficult ones, or are you going to keep a positive-only approach? The approach of positive thinking has its merits, but the study I would like to share today demonstrates that children's abilities to pick up emotions through voice has implications for their future social skills. And then, by extension, this finding has implications for the ways we practice in our work with children. The study is called Neural Decoding of Emotional Prosody in Voice-Sensitive Auditory Cortex Predicts Social Communication Abilities in Children. Authors are Leopold, Abrams, Carricker, and Menon. Study was published in 2023 in the journal called Cerebral Cortex. I know, right? We're looking at cerebral cortex journals now here. So I'm going to keep it to things that affect psychology and actually just give you a couple summaries of what I learned when I reviewed this study. It's a really elaborate study where they did brain mapping of where emotions are processed after children listen to speakers, what they call signal information about their emotional state through their voice. So it's similar to what I was discussing in episode 54, where just in speaking, there is emotional information that gets transferred along with the content of the message. And this is true for children as well. And the conclusion that they came to is fairly lengthy, so I'm going to just highlight the things that affect, as I see it, our practice of psychotherapy. And they say that emotional prosody decoding, so decoding the emotions associated with the statements, was correlated with measures of social communication abilities. And what they found is that more accurate decoding of the prosody, in other words, the emotions associated with the content, was predictive of greater social communication abilities in children. And they go on to say that, quote, social communication abilities were specifically related to decoding sadness, highlighting the importance of tuning in to negative emotional vocal cues for strengthening social responsiveness and functioning, end quote. So I just want to emphasize this counterintuitive finding, and that is what this study suggests is that when children have a better ability to decode negative emotional states through vocal cues, this actually has a correlative effect that shows a strengthening in their social responsiveness and functioning. And these measures are known to be able to predict because of their association with better social outcomes as the children mature. In other words, it's counterintuitive, but the ability to decode negative emotional cues through voice is a skill that helps children develop stronger social skills later on as they mature. So I want to discuss how this finding might apply to the practice of psychotherapy. And in order to do so, I want to talk about the practice of play therapy specifically. Play therapy at its core is intended to provide a way for children to express themselves through play, and this works really well for children who are too young to have the ability to do verbal expression, or who may have experienced a trauma that has delayed that ability. And there's a variety of ways to do play therapy, but in general, it's pretty common to let the child lead the play therapy sequence. And so the way I was taught and the way I practice is to set up different sets of toys and things and then see if you can kind of sit back a little bit and what's called child-led therapy, in the sense that you follow their play lead. And sometimes you're invited to play along, sometimes you're just an observer, and sometimes even in the same sequence that can fluctuate. And in play therapy is one of these moments that for me is a way to be authentic and have authentic vocal statements that I make as part of my interventions. Because when play therapy is working well, the child will come up with very elaborate scenes and multiple characters and lots of things happening. And almost inevitably, there will be a conflict amongst the characters. Usually, I narrate the play scene to help the child connect behaviors to thoughts. So I follow their lead and I narrate what they are telling me or showing me during the play, whether it be positive or negative, unless I'm invited to specifically act out one of the characters, then I show my observation and attentiveness by staying, you know, with the play, and I often narrate back what I heard them say or do. And when it gets to the more difficult interactions, such as maybe a character is getting kicked out of the house or something like that, I really try to focus on how I'm going to state something like that. Especially early on, I may not know if this is an actual fact or something that happened to maybe a friend of theirs, or even they saw it in a show. Play therapy's function is to help kids verbalize these experiences that they've had, and it also serves as a play or a practice for actual life. And so it's really common to have the play therapy scenes be reflective of actual situations or a mix of them. And so what I remind myself all the time is to not get too literal and just kind of follow the flow of things, and I try to really be able to stay with the emotional content that is presented and not direct it one way or another, but especially in the case of when I hear negative emotions, try to stop and see if we can spend a little time with those to help the child start to learn how to process those emotions and not just kind of push them away really quickly, is my thinking. And along the way, you know, this is something, working with children is really important, that you consult a lot, and especially in my training, we would practice together and, you know, have these sessions and learning and then come back together as a group to discuss different ways of responding and how to intervene. And a lot of times it's common for therapists to kind of negate these types of play scenes. If someone were to get kicked out of the house, you know, maybe respond with something like, he got kicked out of the house, but everybody loves everybody in this house, I thought, you know, and kind of challenge the child to sort of, you know, agree with the fact that everyone loves everyone, or did he really get kicked out? And in my perspective, while it might be a well-meaning statement, it actually is unhelpful in at least two ways. First, if this is a play scene that's an actual experience, play therapy works, like I said, because it's a practice for reality. And a lot of times children are playing out these intense emotional experiences with safe adults, like their therapist, to understand the responses to these actual experiences. I think of it in terms of social learning, where they are learning from the adults around them how to respond to these intense emotional experiences. And if we model that, you know, by coming back with an incongruent response, such as in this example, you know, everyone loves everyone, how can he get kicked out of the house? Clearly not everyone is displaying loving feelings if someone just got kicked out. Then we're not helping our patients because we're reinforcing the confusion by sharing this incongruence. So in cases where, you know, maybe I do have an intense reaction and I wish what I was hearing wasn't what I was hearing, then I just try to stay more quiet or wait to hear more information. Because the other reason I feel it's really important that we stay congruent to what the child is displaying is because to come back in an incongruent nature, such as this example, starts to set up a bit of a distrust. Because the child can sense usually that, you know, the play scene they were presenting wasn't a loving scene. And whether it is actual experience of theirs or not, the therapist's attempt to put a happy note on it is where children, to me, are put in a real bind in therapy. Because as therapists, we're always saying things like, tell me how you feel. And in this example, I imagine the child in a bind, such like feeling as though, well, I just did tell you how I feel and you came back with a weird response. And a lot of times you'll see that on their face. If you don't match your narration to the actual experience or even the imagined experience, you know, if their play scene is like negative and violent and fighting and we're trying to sugarcoat that, that sets up a pretty significant distrust because now they are unsure of what it means to tell us how they feel. Because if they're demonstrating in the play violence, sadness, other things, and then we're only allowing the loving, happy feelings to be shared with us, and we're kind of correcting by that statement of incongruence, we're sort of, as the adults, we do typically have the last word in therapy, if you will. And so if we come in and correct that, then the next time we ask them to share with us an authentic feeling or tell us about, you know, something in their world, the rules just got a little bit limited on what they could say. So for these reasons, I think the most important thing to do is to have a genuine reaction to the play scene. I want to balance this with my own projections, though, onto the play scene. In other words, I want to see if I can explore the character's feelings with the child in addition to the behaviors they're displaying in the play scene. And ideally, I would like to have them verbalize the experiences of each character in the scene. In the style of therapy I am trained, this ability to recognize a variety of perspectives is a way to integrate multiple perspectives and experiences, which kind of frees them up as they're developing to have a variety of perspectives. And typically this is associated with more healthy outcomes for humans. So how would I respond to something like this? I might instead reply with something like, That guy got kicked out of the house. I try to narrate back as close to a reaction as is a universal experience of the thing that happened. So in this case, I don't yet know much about this character, but I do know that for most people, getting kicked out of the house is not a pleasant experience. So my voice has an air of sadness to it. That guy got kicked out of the house. And at the last, on the house part, I kind of bring the word back up as though I'm kind of volleying back the narration such that the child has an ability to explain to me more about what that means. It's really simple, but I find it invites the patient to now add details that I can continue to amplify with them. And by amplify, what I mean is give them space to explore more of these characters in the play scene and see if we can get the variety of experiences expressed during the session, and also continue to let them have the freedom of taking this play scene wherever they would like to go. In other words, I don't want to hamper too much on the negative emotions and only stay with those. So I just try to give them a moment to verbalize them, process them a little, and then usually, especially if it's an active play scene, there'll be more things to come up. And so I try to do these little stops and moments just to help them gain skills in associating behaviors, thoughts, and feelings from a variety of perspectives, and then, you know, move on to the next event in the play. One more quote from this study helps solidify perhaps this style of intervening. They say, quote, "When children interact with caregivers and peers, extracting and interpreting the prosodic cues embedded in the speech signal, which are indicative of the speaker's emotional state, is crucial for meaningful social interactions." So another way to reinforce that children's ability to pick up on voice prosody cues are really important to their developing social skills. And yet I wanted to mention one more thing, because as a therapist, this is delicate, because for me, I don't necessarily want them to have the burden of my emotional state. So that's one reason I like to do this through play therapy, because it's one way that I can be authentic and support this overall goal of them learning the skills to discern emotional states without having to be made aware of my personal ones. In the example I just provided, I'm giving an authentic statement about the character in their play while doing play therapy, as opposed to saying my own emotional state. That said, you know, sometimes there are things that affect us both. Like in my case, we have a lot of severe weather where I live and practice. And sometimes there are mutually experienced conditions, such as a scary drive home or the mutual awareness of a neighboring town sustaining damage. And then I am genuine about my care and sadness for those affected. That's one other way I do take the ability to be authentic in displaying emotions through my voice during therapy with patients of all ages, but especially children. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.